And welcome back to the program. Tracy Morgan in with you. Of course, this is your extended news at noon. And I wanted to catch up with Dr. John Love. Of course, we've been talking to him throughout this particular crisis over the past many months. And Dr. Love, thank you very much for your time. I know we only have a few minutes with you today, but thank you for your cooperation in this and in getting some information out.
My pleasure, Tracy. Thanks for having me back on.
So please, if you would, tell us where we are in this right now. And I ask that because if people are keeping track at home, and I don't mean that to be a joke, a couple of weeks ago, we're looking at numbers as high as like 27 in a day for Butler County, of course. And then it wavers, you know, 5, 6, and then we're in the teens. And now all of a sudden over the weekend, we only had a handful. So where are we with this, with our county, and then what are you seeing nationwide?
You know, I think... It's hard to know exactly where we're at. You know, I think we're kind of just at a position where we're going to have some variability in day-to-day numbers. I think we're all expecting to continue to see, a handful of new diagnoses each day. And that may range from a couple to, 10. It's just going to kind of depend on how cases are clustering. All it takes is, one family party and a bunch of people exposed, and we end up with five or ten alone from that. So it's just kind of variable based on what's going on and kind of at the individual level in the community. Nationally, that's still largely what we're seeing. This is everywhere now. This is no longer something that we talk about being limited to, say, high-density populations in urban areas. This is something that people are getting kind of in every setting in the country.
Yeah, have you seen the differences in who is getting COVID, meaning demographics? Do you know more if somebody has inflammation, if they have diabetes, the conditions, are they more susceptible? Has that changed since the beginning?
I'm not sure. I don't think it has. I see more of the patients who end up hospitalized for it, as opposed to the healthy people who are out in the community and tested by their primary care doctors. Looking at the kind of the list that comes across my desk every day, there's a range of positive patients from, pediatric age up through, 60, 70s, 80s. Some of them are, a lot of them are just community dwellers. Some people are from, personal care or nursing homes. It's just kind of all over the map, and that's really the bottom line. Is there's no everyone's at risk, and there's no safe spot.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you is because I think we need to hear your voice. We need to hear your concern, if you will, because we see low numbers and we think we're good to go. I mean, those of us in the community, those of us who are not in your shoes, who live this day in and day out, and I can't speak for everyone, but, you look at these low numbers and we think, well, can we plan something for a month down the road? Can we plan something for 2 months down the road? But hearing you, it is just a great reminder that we're still in the midst of this.
I mean, I would feel a lot more comfortable with saying, yeah, we could start planning for things if I had any faith in people's ability to follow the recommendations in terms of masking and social distancing. But, obviously the population has shown repeatedly that they, a good portion of them have no interest in doing this. And so as long as, there's a fraction of the population that is going to keep, housing this virus, basically giving home to the enemy, there is no way for me to predict, where this is going to go.
So you're still hearing or seeing that people, as you're saying, there's a section of people that are not wearing masks.
I mean, there are, and there are people who are just, understandably fatigued.
Sure.
And
mm-hmm.
they let their guards down, and, they may say, I mask all the time except when I go to blank. And unfortunately, it's the when I go to blank, ends up being, a problem. I mask all the time except when I go, to a family party.
Right.
I know all of them. I trust them. Well, that's great. I'm glad you trust them that they wouldn't rob your house or something. It doesn't mean that they are
right.
unwittingly carrying this virus to you. So I understand where people, we're several months into this, but this is not going to go away. And the more that we do now to normalize masking and this kind of behavior, you know, as we move into school season, you know, the easier it's going to be on the students and on the schools for keeping kids safe in those environments, you know, if they continue on the plans to reopen.
And I do want to ask you about kids, if I could. And I know that you're not in the school system. That is not your focus. Your focus is at the hospital and with infectious diseases. But what have you seen? What have you learned? What are your pediatricians saying about kids in school? Because, again, I feel, and I can only speak through my lens, that there's inconsistent messaging out there in the way of, do kids get this? Are kids immune? Or are they not immune? What's your thought?
So I think kids get this. I think kids get infected. I think the majority of kids do not get as significant of infections as adults do. That doesn't mean that they are less contagious to other people, whether that be other kids or other adults. There are obviously some sequelae of this infection that only children get, or only children seem to get, with the inflammatory response syndrome that has been highlighted in the media. And there are definitely children, you know, young children, school-age children, who have died, you know, as a result of their infection. And so when the messaging goes, you know, when people hear this messaging like kids don't get sick, by and large that's, you know, that's an oversimplification. They tend not to get as sick as adults, meaning, you know, they may not have any symptoms. They may not even have symptoms enough that would keep them home from school. That doesn't mean that they're not carrying this around and can pass it to their teachers, to their family at home, to their grandparents who might be sitting them after school. You know, and so just because they're not getting symptoms doesn't mean that they're not little carriers.
And when we live in this world of generalizations, I've seen it so many times where people just lump this whole category under one or two words. And when we're talking about kids and we're talking about school kids, we're talking anywhere from pre-K to seniors.
Yeah.
And that's a big range. So what is it that you're seeing, or what you're meaning, or you know, what's it mean that kids don't get as sick? Are we talking 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, or are we talking like teenagers?
I think, and I apologize, I don't remember the exact demographics off the top of my head, but I think there was some study that had suggested basically a break point around age 10, and 10 and up tended to kind of behave more like young adults and still have some level of symptomatology, whereas the younger ones were less symptomatic, or maybe even less likely to you know, come down with anything. But again, there's so much we don't know about this. And your point is very important, not just in terms of the biology and the medicine of this. And, you know, we're talking about a wide age range when we say school age kids. We're also talking about a wide age range in terms of behaviors and in terms of, ability to, comply with, you know, some of these, you know, the masking and the distancing and you know, avoiding contact physically. You know, it's a lot more manageable to explain that in a rational way to, you know, your junior or senior high school students than it is to your, you know, your kindergarten kids who
right.
are just going to be all over each other. And so I it's a very difficult message, you know, because it has to be specialized to the audience, and put in language
that's specific.
In ways that's appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there are kids out there, I don't know the numbers in front of me, their bodies aren't as healthy as other kids. And I don't know if disabilities roll into this. I don't know if those like on ADHD spectrums or autism spectrums, if they roll into this in a special way. But has there been any discussion about that when you have a young person that their body is just not functioning as other young people?
You know, I don't know what all the risk factors for kids are off the top of my head. I think, again, with the number of symptomatic cases being, you know, on the lower end, our descriptive epidemiology for them, you know, maybe just lagging a little bit. But there are definitely kids with underlying lung disease, underlying immunodeficiencies, underlying other medical problems that I would expect, because those medical problems in adults give the adults a harder time if they get this, that I would expect those to have some impact on the child's ability to weather the infection successfully.
Yeah.
And it's hard because, you don't want to single these kids out in their classrooms or in their peer groups, but, you have to keep in mind, again, like you're saying, that not every child is the same.
Yeah.
I think, to me, one of the other things that gets lost in all of this is everyone, when we talk about reopening schools, understandably focuses on the students. And, the staff that are put into this environment are all adults. They are not uncommonly older adults with medical problems of their own. I worry sometimes that they are not parsed out and thought of as a different population than the kids that they're trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
These are dedicated educators who want the best for their pupils. And we have to be mindful of their health and safety as well.
Let me ask you one more question. I know you have to go, and I do appreciate your time, Dr. Love, of course, with the Butler Health System Infectious Disease. Does your industry, does the medical field expect to see a spike when kids go back to school? And I'm not trying to point out that the kids would be the ones with the infected cases, but you just mentioned teachers. Teachers have to go back. Administrators have to go back. Nurses go back. Everybody goes back. So there again, if we're trying to avoid gatherings, we, in a sense, are now having kids go back to school with gatherings. And I'm not trying to say anything against the schools. The schools are trying their best, trying to make a decision which way to go here. So it's nothing against the schools, but it's the thought of now there's gathering again. So what's your industry expecting, or is that hard to estimate?
I want to start off by saying I think the schools are facing an extraordinarily difficult task right now. And they are working with the best information, data, recommendations from the state and the CDC that they can. They are doing an enormous amount of work to try to come up with plans that will keep students safe, will keep staff safe, and will appeal and be acceptable to a large portion of the families in their district. And as we talked about, there's a spectrum of people's, kind of opinions on this medical issue. I'm going to ask people to be as patient and respectful of their school administrators as they can be, and basically to cut them a little slack here, because they are really doing a job that they were never expected or asked to do before. And this is all new to them and to all of us. I do expect, and I think most people in medicine do expect to see an increase in cases when schools reopen in the fall. I think what you see around, say, outbreaks with different Major League Baseball teams, when we start bringing people together in environments that are close, even with all sorts of, best intentions and best laid plans, nothing's foolproof.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's going to happen. And I think what we need to decide is, when we see that happening, what is our response going to be? And that's, I think, the biggest question right now. When we see an increase in cases, what are we going to do about it? And that is the million-dollar question.
Well, Dr. Love, I do appreciate your time, because it is just so difficult, as I'm talking to people as well, and the community members and the businesses, and you just want to plan for something and you just can't. It just seems like you can't. And then as soon as you get plan A, plan B needs to be put in place, and plan C and D need to be figured out as well. And that all changes, too. So we appreciate your time just in keeping us updated in what's going on. Dr. John Love, of course, infectious disease at the Butler Memorial Hospital. Thanks so much.